Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And what we traditionally call Election Day is almost 2 weeks away. But really, voting has already begun in many states. About 12 million votes have already been cast, about 10% of the expected total, including in some all-important battleground states like Ohio, North Carolina, and Florida. And even though no official vote counts are being released yet, the voting patterns offer some clues to who's winning. So consider this our first election return segment, as we will now run down what we know about the vote in different states. With me for this is Steve Shepard, chief polling analyst for Politico. Hi, Steve. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good to be back.
And since it's always Election Day somewhere now, happy Election Day. And listeners, we want to invite you to help us report this story. Is there anyone listening right now who has already voted yourself, voted early or absentee in any swing state? Call in and tell everyone who you voted for and why. And given this high tension and high stakes and highly emotional election season, tell us how you were feeling when you cast that vote, when it came time to actually cast that vote after all we've been through over the last year and a half. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Who has already early voted or absentee voted in any swing state? Call in and tell everyone who you voted for and how it felt. Or who listening right now has friends or relatives in any swing state that has early voting? What are you hearing from them? Was there a polling place? Were there lines? Any vote-suppressing vigilantes trying to intimidate them? Are their friends and neighbors in Florida, Ohio, North Carolina, whatever, activated, divided, turning out in droves? Your anecdotal evidence and their anecdotal evidence, welcome here. Tell us your early voting story, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. With Steve Shepard from Politico. And Steve, what do you look for in the early voting patterns that actually gives us clues as to who's winning? What are the data points?
Well, different states, as we know, our election system, even on election night and also for early voting, is a patchwork of different state and local systems. The states generally all report similar to all report statewide in the same way. Some states have partisan party registration, so you can look at, while we can't count the ballots yet and whom voters actually cast their ballots for, we can see the number of registered Democrats, registered Republicans, registered independents who turned out. So obviously comparing those numbers to what we've seen in early voting in years past can be instructive. Moreover, some of the states, particularly those that were governed by the Voting Rights Act, that are still governed in part by the Voting Rights Act, but to a lesser degree than before recent efforts both in the legislature and in the judicial branch to cut out parts of the Voting Rights Act, they are reporting turnout by certain demographic groups. So those may include age, they include race. That is also helpful in divining the groups that are more motivated, at least at this part of the process. And look, across the country, more than 30%, it could end up being as high as 40% of votes are actually going to be cast before Election Day. And when you figure that a state like New York, which has no early voting whatsoever, you have all those voters who are counting toward the Election Day voters, that means in a lot of these swing states, it may be close to half of votes will be counted, will be at least cast before Election Day.
So here we go. And the last Politico article that I see on this from 2 days ago is headlined GOP's Early Vote Worries Mount. And as we start to go state by state, with respect to Florida, it says polling and early voting returns suggest Democrats are slicing into a thinner than expected early vote lead for Republicans in Florida, who as of Tuesday led by about half a percentage point. Why in Florida would the Republicans be expected to have an early voting lead?
Well, typically what we see is there are two basically different kinds of early voting. There's in-person early voting. And there's also absentee balloting, in which you receive your ballot in the mail and have to return it. Republicans have traditionally had a big advantage when it comes to the absentee voting. The in-person early voting is a fairly new phenomenon in Florida and in a lot of states. And Republicans have typically had the more motivated electorate when it comes to voting early. Democrats have made, both in Florida and across the country, massive efforts starting with Barack Obama's two campaigns in 2008 and 2012 to really close that gap and to really drive turnout. And that does two things for you. It enables you to bank your most reliable votes just in case something happens on Election Day that your usually reliable voters can't make it to the polls. Those votes are banked. But they also use it as an opportunity to turn out voters who are less likely to cast ballots. You know, a lot of campaigns have a way of rating individual voters at the individual voter level with their data operations is between 0 and 10 or 1 to 10 based on turnout likelihood. And one of the things that the Obama campaign has talked about is they used early voting with, you know, more flexible hours. You have a week or 2 weeks or sometimes even more. It includes some weekends. It's easier to get to the polls. You're able to get some of those twos and threes and fours on that 1 to 10 scale to come out and vote, and they've done Democrats have done a lot better job both this cycle and in past cycles at using early voting as a way to turn out those less reliable voters.
Kim in Ridgewood, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kim. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Brian. So both my mom and my brother live in North Carolina. My mom is in Wake County, and my brother's in, I believe it's Forsyth County, and my brother's been taking people to the poll, elderly people, and what he said is he's had a couple of instances. First of all, the amount of early voting sites is way down. Actually, there's only one in the county that he's been taking people to, and he said he's had several instances where they said they were voting straight Democratically, and their electronic ballots, and they switched them to Republican, and they had to. So he's telling everybody when they go to the polls to make sure that what they're voting for, they're actually seeing that before they press the button, you know, to say go ahead. So they're definitely up to something down there.
Tell me again that piece of it that you just said, that somebody's switching something to Republican. What was that?
Because these are electronic ballots, when the people are voting, they're voting straight Democratic. And when they looked at their ballots before they hit vote, they noticed that it actually switched it over.
To a different candidate?
Yeah, to Republican. You know, because it's really being hardly fought down there. I mean, they're really trying to get rid of their governor, their
right.
Their congressman, their senator. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on down there.
Kim, thank you very much. Well, is this the first you've heard of any potential shenanigans in North Carolina, Steve?
Well, to the first part of the caller's question about voting sites, that is absolutely true. Republicans in 2012 won the governorship away from Democrats in North Carolina, and since then they've cut early voting both hours and sites, and that has been the subject of a lot of litigation as well, as Democrats sued, alleging that was voter suppression. As for the second part of that, obviously it would encourage all voters, if they're using both paper or electronic methods of voting, to double-check before they submit their ballots. It's funny, just about an hour and a half ago, Donald Trump tweeted that he's been hearing the same thing happening in Texas, complaints of the same thing happening in Texas, but
the other
way
direction.
Around, where intended Republican votes were actually being somehow changed to Democratic votes. Most of the evidence indicates that this is, when it does happen like this, that it's human error with the voter actually casting the ballot. But obviously, that is something that election lawyers, certainly in the most contested states, will be looking at. I'm not sure that there is systematic rigging of these voting systems, but I would encourage all voters to make sure that they're casting the ballot for their intended candidates.
Here is Kirk calling from Prescott, Arizona. Kirk, you're on WNYC. Hey, from New York. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks a lot. Love your show. Anyway, here's the deal. I'm in Arizona here, and I got a mail-in ballot, and it's been sitting on my table for about 10 days, and I'm just torn about what to do with it. I can't vote for Trump because I feel he's just a complete toxic clown who could ruin, destroy our country. But I also, I've been a lifelong Democrat, but haven't been too involved in the process. But I also feel that Hillary is also very unacceptable, although she is basically your typical greaseball politician, which is much better than toxic Trump. But I feel the Democratic Party has really gone the wrong way, too, with the efforts of Donna Brazile and Debbie Wasserman Schultz to really put their fingers on the scale to coronate Hillary. And I really believe that the election of Hillary will cause 4 years of complete gridlock in our system, something that we haven't even seen the beginning of in the gridlock with Obama, who I did vote for 8 years ago. And so I really feel Hillary is completely the wrong person to get in there for the Democrat. So I've been torn. You know, my daughter and my best friend say, man, you got to vote for Hillary. And I say, man, I don't know. I want to vote my conscience. First, I wanted to vote for Gary Johnson, but then he just looked like a complete stoner doofus. And I also don't really believe in a lot of the libertarian, although I did switch my party affiliation from Democrat to libertarian just for, you know, nothing better to do.
So what'd you do? You sent in that ballot, right?
I sent it. I did 10 minutes before the show this morning. I didn't even know what your topic was going to be. I bit the bullet and I said, I got to do it. It's either Evan McMullen, to write in Evan McMullen, even though I don't agree with some of his far-right policies, but he seems like a very honest guy, or Hillary. So it was Evan McMullen or Hillary. I bit my tongue and voted for Hillary.
Huh. And how do you feel now that you actually did it?
I feel like I was pressured to vote for someone I didn't want in office and was not able to vote my conscience, partially because I didn't want to throw away my vote. But I feel it's just what I got to do to keep Donald Trump, who I really feel is possibly has mental problems. I really feel he might be partially crazy and it's just the worst. It's just evil. It's
hey, Kirk, I'm glad you're a listener. Call us again.
All right.
Thank you very much. Jim in Raleigh, North Carolina. Jim, you're on WNYC. Hello from New York.
Yes, hi. I voted in the North Carolina early voting for Secretary Clinton. And I did so, quite frankly, because my boyfriend extracted a promise from me that I would vote for, and it's the most regretful vote I've ever cast in my life.
Tell us why.
Well, Senator Clinton, or Secretary Clinton, I probably fall into that demographic who finds her untrustworthy, inconsistent, ostensibly a talking point in a pantsuit, who will tell voters anything, anytime, anywhere they want to hear, who stands for her own political ambitions, but really doesn't give a damn about the day-to-day issues that affect the poorest and most marginalized people in our country. And we've seen ample evidence that from the degree to which the Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee coordinated the primary to the WikiLeaks exposures about internal dialogue in her campaign to her, you know, bifurcating back and forth on various policies over the course of her career, as well as all the scandals that have erupted around her email, the Clinton Foundation, the King of Morocco, her drug policy. I thought it was that was one thing I'm going to say very quickly. It was particularly interesting. Someone had pointed out to me, and I went back and looked at the CNN transcript when they asked her if she was in favor of recreational use of marijuana, and her answer was no. I think we need to let the states experiment with this, see how it plays out at that level, and then we can make a decision. We need to do further research. However, I don't think we should be putting people in jail for possession of marijuana. And I thought to myself, well, if you're not in favor of recreational use of marijuana,
you don't mean in favor of the use, but the legalization of
the legalization,
use,
correct?
Right.
But we shouldn't be putting people in jail. What's your policy? Where are you? What, you know, it's
right. And I think her policy on that, I think I understand it enough to know that her policy on that is that it's actually not something for the federal government to get involved with, which gives her an opportunity to not, you know, state her opinion on what should happen state by state. But her opinion as a presidential candidate is leave it up to the states. Let Colorado go on with its experiment. Washington State, some other states may enact it in referenda this year. And that's her position.
Well, here's a problem you've got with that, Lennon, and that is that when her husband was president and his own Drug Sentencing Commission recommended to him unanimously to do away with the disparity between sentencing for crack and powder cocaine, former President Clinton said, I do not want to send the message to drug dealers that it's business as usual,
right.
And he completely ignored them. So drug policy in this country has been set at the federal level, not at the state level, and again, it's a perfect example of her punting on the issue, taking a very kind of I please you, I please mm-hmm. them stance rather than mm-hmm. coming out and stating what you want, stating what you really believe.
And that's the candidate you voted for.
I did. I got to tell you, I don't like to – I keep my word. And, again, I blame it on my boyfriend. I could blame it on the cat, but, you know. I made a promise I'd vote for, and I did it.
To your boyfriend.
I sure didn't feel good about it.
Jim, thank you very much for your call. Wow. So I think we have a sense of what a fair number of voters are feeling out there as they vote for Clinton. Steve, my guest, Steve Shepard from Politico. But I read a poll result the other day, not of early voters, just a regular national poll of likely voters, about whether they were primarily voting for their candidate or against the other candidate. And maybe surprisingly, more Clinton voters were voting for her than Trump voters were voting for him. Or the other way to put it, Trump voters were more in a mostly to stop Hillary mode than Hillary voters were in it to stop Trump. And I think that goes against the conventional wisdom that Trump has all this enthusiasm and Clinton voters are all people like these last couple of callers who are holding their nose to stop Trump. Did you happen to see that finding?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. That's been true throughout the course of the campaign, at least since Hillary Clinton won the Democratic nomination in June and coming out of the conventions in July. While enthusiasm is probably tied, it is definitely true that, first of all, not only are there more voters for Hillary Clinton than there are for Donald Trump, pretty consistently with the exception of a couple of different moments throughout the campaign, but that more of her voters say they're voting for her versus against Trump than Trump's voters voting for him rather than against Clinton. I think one basic way to demonstrate this is that Hillary Clinton has an average favorable rating of 44%. Donald Trump has an average favorable rating of 35%. Both candidates are going to win voters on Election Day and before, as we're talking about now, who don't view them favorably. But Donald Trump is going to win more voters who don't view him favorably, who are voting against Hillary Clinton, than Hillary Clinton is going to win voters who don't view her favorably but are voting against Donald Trump. I do think that we talk so much about the energy on the Trump side, and that's built mostly from people who post online and the people who attend his rallies. But the reality is that, at least according to the polls, that's not reflective of where the overall electorate is. There's at least as much energy for her, and certainly there are more voters for her than there are for Donald Trump.
Let's take a call from Joyce in the Ocala National Forest in Florida. Joyce, hello from New York. Thank you so much for calling in.
Good morning. I voted this morning down at our local library. And I live in a very red area. I was expecting demonstrators or something. I went down there. I was the only one who voted. It was very quiet. Everyone was pleasant.
So it's in-person early voting in Florida. People can go to their local polling place any time between now and Election Day? And how did it feel once you cast that vote?
Well, I felt I was canceling out my neighbor's vote, so I was very happy.
What's it like in the Ocala National Forest?
It's very quiet, except for guns. People like guns around here. Otherwise, we have a lot of wildlife. There's excellent hiking, excellent boating, excellent fishing. So it's very much an outdoors area. I like it a lot.
What kind of trees are there in that forest?
Pardon?
What kind of trees are there? In the Northeast, we think of a forest as a certain kind of thing.
No, we've got a lot of live oaks, which are fascinating trees that grow in peculiar positions and end up all twisted. We've got a lot of conifers. We have various types of palms, but they're not the tropical type palms you think of. They're more stunted. And we had an excellent acorn crop this year, after 2 years of none. So all the wildlife is very happy.
Glad to hear it. Joyce, thank you so much. Call us again. And Catherine in Tribeca, whose sister lives in Virginia and early voted. Hi, Catherine. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, my sister who lives in Virginia usually votes by absentee ballot. And this year she was rather surprised when she received it to see that her ballot had to be witnessed. She had to have somebody witness her ballot.
Why?
I don't know. That's what was on the form.
What does witness mean?
She had to have a neighbor or friend or family or member, somebody sign that they had seen her fill this out.
Oh, I see, because it was a ballot that she mailed in. Huh, Steve Shepard from Politico, have you ever heard of that?
I do work in Virginia, but I have not seen a Virginia absentee ballot. What I will say is that Virginia does not have what a lot of states do, which is no excuse absentee voting. New York is similar to this. You have to provide an excuse to the state for why you can't vote on Election Day. A lot of states are moving away from that. They're allowing either no excuse absentee voting or early voting in person. Virginia, and this happens a lot in the Northeast, and a reason why you're taking calls from a lot of callers who live in New York who are talking about family members and their experience with early voting, because the reality is that not all states allow this. And this opens up an interesting discussion about how easy we should make it for people to vote early, and whether early voting is really good for democracy. Obviously, there's a normative principle that the more people vote, the better. But there are arguments that having people vote early while the campaign is still ongoing, while the issues are still being discussed, while there might still be news about the candidates or some of the issues that could change people's vote, once they've cast that vote, even if Election Day doesn't come for another couple of weeks, they can't change it. And so there are a lot of, I think as a country, we're going to be talking every 4 years about this, and in between, about whether or not we do want to make it easier for people to vote early, including things along these lines.
Right. I mean, one big argument for early voting that I tend to subscribe to is there is enough time between the conventions in the summer and, say, the middle of October or beginning of October, when the first early voting states open their polls, that people can make an informed decision. And by giving people a range of time, a period of time, not just one day in which to go to the polls, it makes it so much easier for many people to vote who may not get out of work on the one day or have childcare issues or whatever it is, or be subject to the pressure of their boyfriends and girlfriends and mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers to come on, let's do this. And it's not just a one day opportunity. That's going to increase voting overall and be good for democracy. That's my view anyway. We are just about out of time, but let me touch two real quick things with you. One is just on the big picture of the early voting. The Politico story on Tuesday said that, I'll give you one more state is what I'll do. In Nevada, according to your article, where early in-person voting began on Saturday, Democratic voters cast 23,000 more ballots than Republicans. That's not saying who they voted for, but that's what saying what their party registration was. 23,000 more than Republicans as of Tuesday afternoon, good for a 15 percentage point edge in the nearly 150,000 ballots cast. And in general, early voting is perceived to be good for the Democrats. Why would it be that Democratic constituencies would be more likely to early vote than Republicans nationwide?
Well, I think part of that is based on the concerted effort, particularly in swing states, that Democratic presidential campaigns have made. In Nevada, for example, which you mentioned, that's a key state to look at because, first of all, the polls in Nevada have not always been accurate. It's a very diverse electorate. It's an electorate with relatively low turnout rates in off-year elections and higher turnout rates in presidential elections, where organization really matters, particularly in Las Vegas. The Culinary Union and Democratic groups make a big effort to get their voters to the polls. People work, obviously, odd hours in the Las Vegas casino entertainment industry. And right now, the early voting numbers look a lot like 2012, when Democrats Barack Obama won by 7 points. Democrats also nearly won a Senate seat, and another Senate seat is up for grabs. this year. So that's certainly a state to watch. The polls right now, there was a poll out yesterday, NBC News, Wall Street Journal, Marist poll, that showed the race tied. But if Democrats are getting the kind of turnout that they got in 2012, it's difficult. It's easy to imagine them performing better than their poll numbers on when the votes are counted. And in Nevada, more than two-thirds of the votes in 2012 were cast early, total. So you're talking about a state where early voting is really critical, and Democrats have a very diverse constituency that's not as reliable as in other states, that if they're able to organize them and get them out early, that's really huge for Hillary Clinton's chances there, and also Catherine Cortez Masto, the Senate candidate, looking to succeed Harry Reid, for her chances there as well.
And I'll throw in one other thing, if you can do this in about half a minute. I see your latest article on Politico is about Donald Trump's favorite polls. And we know that he's been out there in recent days claiming that the mainstream polls, the ABC News, Washington Post poll, the Wall Street Journal, NBC poll, all of those are biased in favor of the Democrats. But there are a couple of polls that you say he likes. What are they?
Well, there are polls from Rasmussen Reports, which has been a Republican-leaning automated poll that shows today Hillary Clinton ahead by 1 point, which is a lot closer than what we've seen from other polls. There's the Investor's Business Daily tip poll, which shows now, the article says Hillary Clinton by one, but that was yesterday. It's now Hillary Clinton by 1.2 points. If you round it, it's two. They are the Los Angeles Times USC Dornsife poll, which is a different kind of study that has always been friendlier to Donald Trump than the other surveys. And this allows Donald Trump to tell his supporters that this race is still very much up for grabs. And right now, Republicans across the country want to hear that, because if Donald Trump is down by 5 or 6 points, it's very difficult to imagine him winning. But they're concerned about the Senate. They're concerned about the House. They're concerned about governorships. They're concerned about state legislatures. And if Republican voters are depressed because they think Donald Trump is going to lose, particularly his most ardent supporters, and they don't turn out, then those are Republican votes down ticket that don't show up either.
Would you say, is it possible to say that all these polls coming out with different findings about where the race stands are honest polls that have legitimate disagreements in their methodology and why they come out the way they do? Or, like, I've heard people say Rasmussen tends to be a biased conservative poll, just like Trump says some of the others tend to be a biased liberal polls. From your vantage point as a polling analyst for Politico, are all these honest polls with just different ways of crunching the numbers that they think are more accurate?
Honest is a difficult way to put it. What I would say is that Rasmussen uses mostly kind of methodology where they only call landline phones using an automated response. That has tended, and Rasmussen's polls as a result have tended to lean heavily Republican to Republican when you compare them to the election results in the past. The Los Angeles Times study is a consistent panel that's weighted to the 2012 election results. It likely has too many Republicans. It uses a lot of weighting to try to be demographically accurate and reflective of the overall electorate. It is problematic in terms of a projection of the actual popular vote, but an interesting study because they talk to the same people over and over again. It will be interesting to look at after the election. I'm not sure it's predictive pre-election. The Investor's Business Daily poll, that's one conducted with the same kind of methodology as the same media as the media polls have been. There are some questions, though. They weight to party identification rather than treating that as an attitude that is that can be adjusted. People say they're Democrats or say they're independents. They move between these. They treat that as a fixed attribute like race or age or gender, which is controversial in polling circles. They have been more Republican than other polls so far. That was the same case for most of some of the previous election cycles, though they did work closer in the end. It'll be interesting to see how that moves between now and Election Day and if it joins up with the other polls. Right now, though, these three look like outliers in what Hillary Clinton is probably ahead between 3 and 9 or 10 points, somewhere in that range, and these polls look like the outliers.
Really interesting. Thank you, Steve Shepard, Chief Polling Analyst for Politico. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure.